The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. This evening, we continue our Bringing America Back to Life series. Tonight, we will feature a presentation from our 2021 convention. We know that you will be inspired by the ideas, the principles, the experiences, and the wisdom of our speakers as they join us to pave the way back to life through prayer, action, voting, and education. It is now my pleasure to introduce Paul Kengor, PhD, Professor of Political Science at Grove City College and a New York Times best-selling author of over a dozen books. Kengor is an internationally recognized authority on Ronald Reagan, the Cold War, communism, socialism, and conservatism. His articles have appeared in publications from the Washington Post, the USA Today, to the Wall Street Journal and New York Times. He is a longtime columnist and senior editor of the American Spectator. In 2017, he released what has been described as his magnum opus, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. In August 2020, he released his latest book, The Devil and Karl Marx.
Okay, thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate that. And so I have a PowerPoint presentation, and I've got, I guess, about 50 minutes, Marty, right, till about 10:10. And I'll just jump right into it. And I know there's a lot of younger people out here as well. This is, you could also call this talk probably what you're not going to learn in college, right, or what you haven't learned yet up until this point. Unless you go to a college like mine, Grove City College, Hillsdale was mentioned. There's a few safe choices out there, but not that many. And it's interesting. Bob noted that I'm a columnist for the American Spectator. I was at American Spectator yesterday, which is in Washington D.C. So I drove up from Washington, left about 3, got here probably about 10 o'clock last night, and. It's not that bad of a drive, actually, right? Those of you from Cleveland, it's about 6 hours, but traffic slowed me down. But I was talking to Bob Terrell, the editor-in-chief. He goes by R. Emmett Terrell, Jr. That's been his signature line. He founded the American Spectator in 1967. He's still going strong. And I'm writing the history of the American Spectator. He's writing his memoirs. And we're both in the period 1989 to 1991. Which is when the Berlin Wall fell, communism collapsed, we won the Cold War, and we were talking yesterday, we thought we won this. We thought this was over, right? I didn't think I would ever need to be going around the country giving talks with titles like Why Communism Isn't Cool, right? Why Communism Is Bad. But that's where we are. And I've had already today, since I walked in around 8 a.m., at least a half dozen of you, right, who've come up to me and just said, I can't believe this. Why are so many people supporting communism? Why are they supporting socialism? So it's a good question, and that's what I'm going to hit here today. All right, so we'll start here. Why communism isn't cool, it's deadly, and it is indeed just that. Little shameless capitalist plug for some of my books there, all right? But some of the material that you'll hear My latest book is called The Devil and Karl Marx. That's the one in the middle with that grim figure staring at you, Karl Marx in red. And a lot of the quotes that I'll be using, you could find from that book, so you know where some of this material comes from. All right, so in terms of what Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels wanted, the Communist Manifesto was published in 1848. And the goal here was that, so communism had been around up to that point, not that long, but for a few years. And about 40 communists met in a group called the Communist League around 1845, 1846, 1847. Karl Marx was one of them. Friedrich Engels was another. And they said, we need a statement of what we believe. We need basically a programmatic statement of what communists believe. By the way, they initially called it, it's fascinating in the writings of Marx and Engels and their statements, the kind of aping of God, the mocking of God in religion for these guys who claim to be atheists. They were atheists, but they end up treating communism like a religion. Ronald Reagan called it communism, that religion of theirs. And when they were talking about the Communist Manifesto, Engels wrote to Marx, he said, give a little more attention to our Communist Confession of Faith. They called it a Communist Confession of Faith. Engels said, I think we should drop the catechetical form and call it simply the Manifesto, the Communist Manifesto. So they wrote in there, and for those of, by the way, any of you who are younger, all ages, if you want to take pictures of any of these slides, go for it. You might need these when you're in college, all right? You share these with your professor. And I'd be happy, too, if you emailed me to share this presentation with you. So email address is pgkengor@gcc.edu. I could repeat that again later. So the opening statements of the opening words of the Communist Manifesto, a specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism. And the line continues after that, all the ancient powers of Europe, czars, popes, Metternich, have entered into a holy alliance to exorcise the specter. They didn't mean exercise, E-X-E-R, like run on an elliptical, right? Exorcism, to exorcize this specter of communism. Marx and Engels said, the theory of the communists can be summed up in a single sentence. So right here, if you ask, what do communists believe? In one sentence, this is it. Abolition of private property. Abolition of private property. Now, right then and there, I mean, my 9-year-old daughter, Gianna Maria, could tell you, Daddy, they're going to have to kill a lot of people if they want to do that, right? And you'll see how many people died from this. I mean, there's nothing more basic than private property. You know, Judeo-Christian, from the cave to the courthouse, biblical law, natural law, thou shalt not steal. I mean, property is—it's just a foundation. Property, religion, family—all these things—they go after all of these things. But the entire theory of the communists may be summed up in a single sentence: abolition of private property. I mean, you're going to have to kill people to take away their private property. And I run into young people all the time who say, "Oh, the Communist Manifesto is a pretty good book if you just read it." Like, no, you haven't read it. You clearly haven't read it, because if you want to abolish private property, you are going to have a bloodbath on your hands. You're going to need guns. You're going to need gulags. You're going to need secret police. This is going to be a battle. They double down on this. You're horrified at our intending to do away with private property. Then what do they say? Well, we don't really mean that, right? Precisely so. That is exactly what we intend to do. Abolish your private property. Marx acknowledged that his views on property stood contrary to, quote, the social and political order of things. Yep, they do. That's exactly right. No question about that. They got that. They understood it. Wanted to abolish Dr. Martin Malia of Cal Berkeley. They wanted to abolish private property. They wanted to abolish markets, money, entire states, entire societies. This is an absolutely revolutionary transformation of human nature. This idea, Michael Knowles wrote in the foreword to my book, The Devil and Karl Marx. He said, critics all the time, conservatives and others say, well, Marxism doesn't work because it distorts markets. It's like, no, it distorts markets, but it doesn't work because it's contrary to human nature. I mean, it's evil. You've got to understand that Marx wasn't an economist. This guy was a philosopher. All right. They have a 10-point plan in the Communist Manifesto. I won't go through all of these. I could do 45 minutes on this one slide right here. But there's actually a 10-point plan in the manifesto. I've given just a few excerpts there. Point one, abolition of property on land. Point two, a heavy progressive or graduated income tax, which we got in America in what year? Anybody know? 1913. Very good. Very good. It's going to be a quiz at the end of this, by the way. All right. 1913. Point three, abolition of all right of inheritance. Oh, that's easy enough, right? By the way, tell that to the communism-supporting millennial at Starbucks, right? That, by the way, you don't get to inherit any of your parents' money, all right? None of it. All going to the federal government. 100%. 100%, point three. Others here, confiscation, centralization of means of communication. Oh, number nine is one of my favorites. I love this. Everyone skips over this. Think about this. Think about what this means. Gradual abolition of all the distinction between town and country. Oh, is that all? By a more equitable distribution of the population over the country. They didn't want to just redistribute your property and your money. They wanted to redistribute you. Right? There's not enough of an equitable distribution here, comrade, of people in town and country. We need to more equitably distribute you. If you've ever seen the beginning of the movie about Cambodia, the killing fields, when they're all being emptied out into from the capital, out into the countryside, they're doing Marx. They're more equitably distributing the population. And then 10, did you know that this was in the Communist Manifesto? Very few people do. Free education for all children in public schools. One of the first things that the Bolsheviks did in Russia and that every communist state did, ban private schooling, ban religious schooling, ban home education. They wanted everybody in their regime government-controlled schools where they could teach them this stuff and ban religion and everything else. Marx and Engels said, well, of course, in the beginning, this can only be affected by means of despotic inroads. In other words, tyranny, despotism. So if you're reading this, you're thinking, don't they realize you're going to need tyrants to implement this? Actually, yes, they did. Of course, right? They weren't that dense. They got it. They understood. War on home education. They write in the Communist Manifesto, Marx and Engels, do you charge us with wanting to stop the exploitation of children by their parents? Where they say, well, we don't want to do that. No, that's a sacred bond. To this crime, we plead guilty. Guilty. Yes, indeed. But you will say we destroy the most hallowed of relations when we replace home education by social. But that's what they did. They railed against the disgusting bourgeois claptrap about the hallowed correlation of parent and child. They wanted to separate parents and children. They forced moms, women, out into the factories and the fields. As Engels wrote in a book that was published a year after Marx died, 1884, The Origins of the Family, which Marx helped him write before he died, they wanted housekeeping to become a public industry, full-time nursemaids at home, right? I mean, this was, they went after the family. On race, this is... I don't think I even want to read this stuff here publicly. It's very offensive. And very few people know this. Marx and Engels were racists. And they used the N-word. They had think about this. Because they were atheists, they were evolutionists, and they had a very offensive view of where people and ethnic groups fell on the evolutionary scale, with some races higher and superior to others. Now, you could look at some of those there. You could even take pictures of those if you'd like. I could give you references. And frankly, if you just Google my name, Marx on race, evolution, any number of articles will pop up that have these quotes. I have them all in the Devil and Karl Marx book. And I point this out, too, because we're in a cancel culture, which, by the way, I don't support canceling anybody. But it is amazing what you can get canceled for if they don't like you, right? You'll find one historical figure who will have made one comment about something that's definitely not very kind or very sensitive. And if that person is a Republican or somebody on the right that progressives don't like, they're toast, right? Dr. Seuss, Pepe Le Pew, right? I mean, but Marx and Engels get away with murder on this stuff. I mean, the things that they said, horrible. His son-in-law from Cuba, named Paul Lafargue, he called him the gorilla. The gorilla. And I say there why in the slide. And poor Paul had such low self-esteem that Paul, along with Marx's daughter, committed suicide in a suicide pact. I think I mentioned this later in the slides, but Marx and Engels, Marx, name for me another historical figure where this applies. Marx had two daughters that committed suicide, both of them in suicide pacts with their husbands. That's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. That's another statement, Engels on Marx's son-in-law. Horrible stuff. Horrible stuff. Marx gets away with this. Engels gets away with it. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, gets away with it. Right? They get away with it because people on their side like them, like their ideology. All right. Marx was very anti-Semitic. This too. I mean, find any historical figure. Find statements like this from Donald Trump. The man is toast, right? Ironically, too, Marx was an ethnic Jew. What is the worldly cult of the Jew? Haggling. What is the worldly god of the Jew? Money. Right? The Israelite faith is repulsive to me, said Marx. Totally gets away with it. And I could give you statements like from Marx and Engels on women as well. They get away with it. They hated religion. Marx, Lenin who would implement Marxism in Bolshevik Russia starting 1917. It's often known as Marxism-Leninism. What's the famous quote, you guys? There it is at the top from Marx, right? Religion is the opium of the masses. The full quote there is even more damaging. A lot of people don't know the full context. Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature, the heart of a heartless world, the soul of soulless conditions. It is the opium of the people. He says in that same essay, the criticism of religion is the beginning of all criticism. Think about that, right? That's actually a pretty good insight by Marx, right? I can't disagree with that. You really want to criticize everything, go after religion. Dostoevsky, the famous Russian writer, wrote The Possessed, among other books, said, if God does not exist, everything is permissible. And these guys said, good point. Let's abolish God. That will make what we want to do permissible. The criticism of religion is the beginning of all criticism. Marx said, communism begins where atheism begins. The next time you run into Reverend Social Justice, all right, telling you about why Christians should like communism or should be socialist, right? Marx, Engels, Lenin would laugh him out of the room. Say, what are you talking about? Communism begins where atheism begins. It doesn't fit at all. Can't be. Nikolai Bukharin, one of the founding editors of Pravda, said we must take on religion at the tip of the spear. Communism and religion are incompatible. Lenin, how's this for a quote? All worship of a divinity is a necrophilia. Y'all know what that is? Yeah. Don't look it up, all right? There is nothing more abominable than religion. That's quite a statement. Thank God, literally, we don't have statements like that from George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, right? Right? George Washington at Valley Forge, right? There is nothing more abominable than religion. So all of this, Marx, criticism and abolition, these are some of my favorites too. Marx in the Manifesto said that communism represents the most radical rupture in traditional relations. Yes, it does, which is why young people, you shouldn't be buying into this. Well, it's pretty good. Marxism talks about sharing, spreading the wealth. It also talks, it's the most radical rupture in traditional relations. My favorite statement, communism seeks to, quote, abolish the present state of things. If a student of mine handed in a paper saying, Professor Kangaroo, I'm going to argue in this 30-page paper for the abolition of the present state of things, right? It's like, you got quite a challenge in front of you there, son, right? Good luck with that. The communists openly declare, said Marx and Engels, that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. The forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. I mean, these weren't tinkerers. Well, we could have fixed the things in society that aren't just. No, we want the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. I think of the founder of BLM, Patrice Cullors, who calls herself a Marxist, right? Among other things, if she only knew that Marx was a racist, maybe she could call herself a communist if she wants, but she shouldn't be calling herself a Marxist. But, I mean, forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions? Marx, in a letter to Arnold Rouge, called for the ruthless criticism of all that exists. And my favorite, Marx had a favorite quote. Now, this is interesting, right? Father, I enjoyed your prayer and your be not afraid. It's kind of that part of your message. If people would ask me, Paul Kangaroo, do you have a favorite quote? I'd say, yeah, maybe John Paul II exhorting people, be not afraid. Maybe a scripture verse, right? Ronald Reagan said, oh, yeah, I've got this is my Old Testament verse, here's my New Testament verse. And I used to have a plaque on my desk that said, there's no credit to how much a man can achieve if he doesn't mind who gets the credit, right? Nice statements. They asked Marx, he said, yes, a line from Goethe's Faust. The Mephistopheles character, who was the Mephistopheles character? The devil, the demon, right? Yes, I have a favorite quote. Everything that exists deserves to perish. Yeah. Everything that exists deserves to perish. This is a dark, destructive worldview. The fact that we have young people supporting this, I'll say this in their defense. They don't know any of this. They don't know it. They haven't been taught it. They haven't been taught this stuff. War on the Family, and now here we're getting into some stuff that's very close to this convention and what Molly does and you know this amazing conference that you folks put on every year. Marx wrote to Engels, "Blessed is he who has no family." Marx was I could talk for a half an hour about Marx's family life. Maybe I'll hold back on that. But look at, did you know that this line is in the Communist Manifesto? Abolition of the family! Exclamation mark. Even the most radical flare up at this infamous proposal of the communists. So in 1848, he could already say abolition of the family was an infamous proposal of the communists. So Marx doesn't want to just abolish markets and capital and private property, right? But religion, God, all morality, states, society, all that exists, and the family, right?
oh, I think Marxism's a pretty good idea if you just read the Communist Manifesto.
Read it. Read it. There's no excuse for this kind of ignorance. This stuff is, go to Marxist.org and get the Communist Manifesto for free. Read it. It's a short book. All right, so the Bolsheviks seize power in Russia in 1917. Who are those three lovely individuals? Stalin, Lenin, and Trotsky, right? Stalin, Lenin, and Trotsky. The killing spree begins right away. They 7 million dead from 1918 to 21 in the Russian Civil War. I'll give you some data in a few minutes on how deadly this was. But close to the heart of this conference and Molly's organization, what they did with abortion is unprecedented. There's never been anything like it in history. Lenin immediately argued for the unconditional annulment of all laws against abortion. He wrote that in 1913 in Pravda, 4 years before they even took over. They were hell-bent on legalizing abortion. You could find today, I have a chapter in this in my politically incorrect guide to communism called Communism is Good for Women. This is what they've been teaching all over the place. New York Times, on and on. My favorite all time is a piece in the New York Times, 2017, 100th anniversary of this. Women had better sex under communism. Yeah. You look it up, you'll find it right away. Yeah, it's just amazing. And I wrote a piece on it for American Spectator, you know, mocking it, ridiculing it. And I got an email from a guy who said, well, you know, actually, I worked at the Berlin Wall in the 1970s, and I could tell you, on the other side of the Iron Curtain, at like 5 o'clock, all the lights would go off. There's probably nothing else to do but have sex under communism at that point. Nah, that's not very funny, I guess. All right. But why was communism so good for women? Because they got the right to abortion. What else does a gal need, right? What could be more liberating? And you could find articles this too about women in China. Well, they got the right to abortion. Now, never mind they were told you can only have one child, right? A complete restriction on reproductive freedom. But they were very progressive in their legalization of abortion. By the way, you won't hear this. Over half of the world's suicides are in China. 56% of the world's suicides are female and in China. So by 1920, they fully legalized abortion. It got so bad that by 1934, women in Moscow were having 3 abortions for every live birth. We've never been anything like that in America. It got so out of control so fast that Joseph Stalin said, oh, this is ghastly, man. we're not going to have a country left. So in 1936, Stalin banned it. He was reprimanded by Trotsky. You cannot be a good communist and ban abortion, comrade. But Stalin banned it. It was brought back in 1955 by Nikita Khrushchev. He re-legalized it. And by the late 1960s, yes, this is from a book by Harvard University Press, one can find Soviet women who have had 20 abortions. Now, it wasn't typical, but one could find. This is according to official Soviet statistics. By the 1970s, I cite all the stuff in my book, Takedown, which I think I presented on here about 5 years ago. By the 1970s, the Soviet Union averaged 7 to 8 million abortions per year. Some of you folks from the pro-life community, our worst year, Roe v. Wade in America, was, do we ever have even 2 million a year? Close, right? 1 to 2 million a year. By the way, praise God, a baby cries, how perfect that is. amen. We're now down to, I think, under 1 million abortions a year in the United States. So they had comparable population to us. Populations, USSR and the United States were pretty close. 7 to 8 million a year. By the year 2050, according to the UN, Russia's population would drop from 140 million to 104 million. So Vladimir Putin put the first restrictions on abortion in Russia since like 1955. Terrible. Terrible. Margaret Sanger took a trip to the Soviet Union in 1934, that summer. She made pilgrimage with her boyfriend, H.G. Wells. And she was married. By the way, sad story is Margaret Sanger's suffering husband and children that she would leave behind on these jaunts. But she came back, and in her birth control review, she wrote an article. She went there to kind of soak in the accomplishments of the progressive motherland on the issue of birth control. And she raved. She said, "The mother and the children are under the protection and care of the government to an extent perhaps never before equaled in history." Now, this is Stalin's Russia. And this is what Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, wrote in 1935. "We could well take example from Russia, where there are no legal restrictions, no religious condemnation, and where birth control instruction is part of the regular welfare service of the government." Well, that's where we are today. It took America about 80 years, right? 1934, 35, up 2014, 2015. Still suing the Little Sisters of the Poor, right? Who's part of the National Organization for Women's Dirty 100 list. And some of these other resistors. But, you know, birth control instruction is now part of the regular welfare service of the government. Your tax dollars pay for it. Now, Sanger, to her credit, was actually horrified by the number of abortions taking place. She said, in Moscow alone, there's like 100,000. She's shocked, right? The founder of Planned Parenthood. But then she said this, "But of all the Soviet officials with whom I discussed this matter stated that as soon as the economic and social plans of Soviet Russia are realized, neither abortions or contraception will be necessary. A functioning communistic society will assure the happiness of every child." Right? Amazing. Amazing. All right, communism goes global. I'm going to skip through some of these. I'm watching the clock. I got about 20 minutes left. But this was an ideology Marx and Engels said at the close of the Communist Manifesto, right? "Workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains." They said this needs to go global. This needs to be a global system. The whole world needs to be communist. Not just one country. Lenin said, I mean, we never did this. We weren't just counting on a socialist revolution in one country, right? It needs to be done in all the leading countries of the world. So they set up something called the Soviet Comintern, which Trotsky called the General Staff of the World Revolution. There would be this communist international group in Moscow, and it would organize the global communist conspiracy. Every country would have a communist party, and each communist party would have a representative in the Comintern and vice versa. They would communicate to one another, and that's how they would run this. They would do it. In the United States, we got ours in September 1919 in Chicago. Started in Chicago. 1219 Blue Island Avenue in Chicago. I've got the original document. They're reporting to the Soviet Union, right? "Comrades, we have created, long live the glorious Soviet Republic." Signed by Charles Ruthenberg, who today is buried in the wall of the Kremlin. The wall of the Kremlin. Yeah. Classical Marxism versus cultural Marxism. I better skip it. Sorry. They eventually come to America. All right, they come to the United States. So they create Communist Party USA. You want to follow this stuff? CPUSA.org. It still exists. I check the website about once a week. Their publication was The Daily Worker. Today it's called People's World. You can find that online. You can read it. So the 1930s, if you joined Communist Party USA, you swore a loyalty oath. And this was the loyalty oath. "I pledge myself to rally the masses to defend the Soviet Union, not America, right? Stalin, Soviet Union. The land of victorious socialism, I pledge myself to remain at all times a vigilant and firm defender of the Leninist line of the party, the only line that ensures the triumph of Soviet power in the United States. They wanted what they called a Soviet American Republic. That was the founder, one of the founders of Communist Party USA, William Z. Foster, who was a founding board member of the ACLU, created by Roger Baldwin, who in 1929 wrote a book called Liberty Under the U.S. Constitution, right? Liberty Under the Soviets. Langston Hughes, famous poet. Put one more S in the USA, make it Soviet. When we are finished, it will be the USSA. There's the Hollywood 10. Hey, you might want to take a picture of that. You guys in school, your teacher, your professor. I'll tell you, Joe McCarthy and those people were so vicious. These were just liberals, progressives, the Hollywood 10. And they were persecuted for their beliefs. First of all, it wasn't Joe McCarthy. It was the Democratic-run House Committee on Un-American Activities. It was founded by Democrats throughout almost the entirety of its history. It was a Democratic-run committee. And every single member of the Hollywood 10 was a member of Communist Party USA, which means that they swore that loyalty oath to work to ensure the triumph of Soviet power in the United States. There's their CPUSA numbers, all 10 of them. We had those as early as 1947. And it's not hidden in FBI documents. When they were called to testify, it was presented right there. Dalton Trumbo, John Howard Lawson. Lawson, when they presented Lawson's Communist Party USA number and all these checks to the Communist Party and everything, you know what he did? Why, you fascists, right? Nazis. Probably would have called him homophobe if that was a word back then, right? Just started screaming out, this is like Hitler, right? That's how he reacted when they said, well, by the way, you say you're not a communist, but here's your CPUSA number, here's these checks you wrote to. Yeah, that's how he responded. All right, that's Frank Marshall Davis, President Obama's mentor in the 1970s. I wrote a whole book on him called The Communist. His CPUSA number was 47544, and he was, it's interesting, in the FBI, his FBI file, which is 600 pages long, their underground code word for the party when he was in Hawaii was the church. They called it the church. And there's his FBI file. You could see the number there, 47544. Describes where he's from. The document on the right is the FBI security index. He was placed on the security index. He was considered so loyal to the Soviet Union that if a war broke out between the United States and the USSR, he was on a list of people who could be immediately arrested as somebody who wasn't considered loyal to America. And he's just one of 50,000 to 100,000 Communist Party USA members. The Rosenbergs, the guy on the right, Lee Harvey Oswald, who was the assassin of JFK, he's holding in one hand the rifle that he shot JFK with, and he's holding in the other hand a copy of The Militant, which is published by the Trotskyist Socialist Workers' Party. Bernie Sanders was a formal presidential elector to the Socialist Workers' Party in 1980 and 1984. To this day, they still publish The Militant. By the way, if he's holding a copy of National Review there, William F. Buckley Jr.'s publication, it would cease to exist. That'd be the end of it. Done forever, right? Holding a copy of Christianity Today or National Catholic Register, done forever. That's it, right? But they get away with this stuff. Angela Davis is America's most famous female Marxist. There she is speaking at the Women's March in Washington, January 2017. She was one of the co-chairs of the Women's March. She writes the foreword to Patrice Cullors' memoir, the BLM founder. There she is talking to Castro, talking to Erich Honecker, who built the Berlin Wall in Berlin. She received the Lenin Prize in the Soviet Union. She ran for Vice President of the United States on the Communist Party USA presidential ticket in 1976 and 1980. And today she talks not just about communism, but mainly LGBTQ issues. That's where the fight is now. There's some other famous 60s Marxists, Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, Mark Rudd. I got to speed up. All right. How many people did these guys kill? That's the Black Book of Communism, put out by Harvard University Press, 1999. It estimates that communism was responsible for the deaths of at least 100 million people in the 20th century alone. There's a breakdown. Who's that laying there? Vladimir Lenin. That's him today, lying in state in Red Square, right? Jaundiced, needs to have his skin waxed periodically. So the USSR, at least 20 million deaths. I think the number is closer to 60 to 70 million. The Black Book of Communism credits China with the most deaths, 65 million. The number's probably more like 70 million plus. So really, the total number is probably more like 140 million altogether. Give you a sense of comparison. World War I, about 10 million dead. World War II, about 50 million dead. You got to take the two world wars combined and double them to get close to the number of people the communist governments killed. All right. Any good news, right? Dr. Ken Gore, Dr. Death, right? Yes, we win, they lose, to quote Ronald Reagan. We won the Cold War with people like this. Reagan, John Paul II, Margaret Thatcher, Lech Walesa of the Solidarity Movement is still alive. Vaclav Havel, Mikhail Gorbachev is still alive. He just turned 90. Boris Yeltsin. Or wait a second, did we? Did we win? That's a West Point cadet at his graduation ceremony with Che Guevara underneath his uniform. Millennials prefer socialism to capitalism by about 46 to 42%. 25% have a positive view of Vladimir Lenin. One in three millennials and one in four Americans generally, ladies and gentlemen, think that George W. Bush killed more people than Joseph Stalin. Where would they get that idea? All right? But if you're in your university and all you hear for 4 years is Bush bad, Bush bad, Bush bad, and you've learned nothing about the Cold War and nothing about communism. In fact, the only thing you learn about communism is about sharing and helping people out. It's about brotherly love. You probably think to yourself, oh yeah, Bush must have killed more people than Stalin. You're off there by about 60 million, right? Okay, November 29th survey, Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation shows that 36% of millennials approve of communism, and 22% believe that society would be better off if all property was abolished, right? To which I say, yeah, right. All right, the solution to this, education, education, education. You have to fight back. With wit and courage, father, be not afraid, right? And those students are wearing T-shirts, Che Guevara T-shirts that say, communism killed over 100 million people and all I got was this lousy T-shirt. That's pretty cool, right? You need to respond like that. And one more thing, be not afraid to stand for the truth. And one more thing. Please quit sending your kids and grandkids to these lousy universities. Please. All right? You can't do it. You can't do it. You're paying them a fortune to teach them this stuff. And most important isn't even so much what they do learn, but what they don't learn. And so much of what I've said here today, they would say, I'm sorry, I just never knew any of that stuff. In fact, they'll probably walk away thinking, that can't be true. There's no way. Who could shield that much from us? But they do. So you've got to, don't go to those colleges. Please don't go to those colleges. It's a waste of time and money. All right, I got 7 minutes and 32 seconds. You got some questions for me?
We have lots of questions. We have more questions for you than we had for Charlie Kirk.
All right, okay, good. All right.
But we have to do them now to get out by 10:10.
Okay. Okay, yeah, no, go for it. No, I'm done. I'm done speaking. Go ahead, ask me questions.
I'm sitting here listening, fascinated, like everyone else is, and struggling. I don't want to be rude and interrupt, but so many people have so many phenomenal questions for you. This is a bigger load than we had for the keynote last night. So, first of all, Dr. Paul Kenger, please. Great presentation.
Thanks.
So informative. Unbelievable.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I just have a boatload of question cards here for you, and I've been trying to sort them and order them, and I'm not doing very well at it because there's so many good ones. Let me just jump in. The first one I wanted to ask, I may have lost already, but I remember it simply. It said, many people use the words socialism and communism interchangeably, and I would say many use Marxism. The three of them, oh, they're all the same, and they're all similar, but can you differentiate?
Yeah, great question. And the... So did the communists. In fact, the Bolsheviks were originally the Social Democratic Labor Party of Russia, right? And they split in 1903, January 1903. They were meeting in exile, so they met in Brussels and London, and they split into the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. But they were the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party. That's what they began as. And in Marxist theory, in Marxist-Leninist theory, history would pass through a dialectical phase, through these dialectical stages, a series of stages, right? History would go from feudalism, slavery, to capitalism, to socialism, to communism. So in Marxist theory, remember USSR, the second S stands for socialist. So in communist, Marxist, and Leninist theory, socialism was just the final step, or the step to the final step of becoming communist. That was the goal. Marion Smith of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation says when he's asked the difference between socialism and communism, he likes to say, well, as Christians aspire to heaven, socialists aspire to communism. And I like that analogy because it's kind of a new Jerusalem to them, right? A secular utopia. That's indeed what they're striving for. Now, that said, you run into a lot of socialists in America today, and they said, well, I'm a socialist, but I wouldn't be a communist. So they're redefining socialism. But if you look it up, if you type it into Google right now, Merriam-Webster, it'll pop up. Socialism is common ownership of the means of production, government ownership of the means of production. One more thing, the most popular socialist group in the United States is called the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA. Who's its most famous member? Poster girl, if you will. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib. She's the one that said about Donald Trump, we're going to impeach the mother, right? So they're all members of the DSA, which has about 80,000 members. Communist Party USA has about 5,000 members. But the DSA actually has members of Congress. And if you look, this is interesting. They're not really Democrats. They're members of the Democratic Socialists of America. They just ran for office as Democrats. And if you go to the website of the DSA, it calls itself the largest socialist organization in America. I check their websites. I follow their social media all the time. Look up... Go to YouTube and look up Democratic Socialists of America Annual Convention. They stand up there at the platform and call themselves comrades. They address themselves as comrades. So in public, before CNN or whoever, if they want to attack Tucker Carlson or somebody, they'll say, we're not communists, we're democratic socialists. But then when they actually meet, they call themselves comrades and communists and all sorts of things. At the very least, they are socialists. And so one thing you should ask all of them is, well, tell me, if you're a socialist, you should believe in common ownership of the means of production. And some people have asked this to Bernie and to AOC. Then tell me, what all would you have the government take over? The banks? Coal companies? Yeah, they would, right? Fracking industry? Yeah, they would do that too. Transportation? Communication? Name them. Which ones? Tell me. It's a fair question to ask for somebody who's running for office who's a socialist.
It's pretty amazing. You mentioned the Communist Party USA is only about 5,000 strong.
Yeah,
they managed to be marching with a banner at almost every BLM and Antifa march
it's amazing.
That you ever see.
They're always there. Yeah. By the way, that's because you have the other group is called Revolutionary Communist Party USA, RevCom, and they agitate according to race. So, like, when Ferguson, Missouri seemed to have cooled off, a former student of mine goes to these rallies as kind of like an insider, and he sends me pictures of all these things. As soon as a lot of these things cool off, they go right in, man, and throw gasoline on the embers. And so it's in their interest to stoke, to get the fire going, right, to take down, to tear down, to get people in the streets. I mean, that's how you tear down.
Coming soon to Minneapolis, part two.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Dr. Kanger, was Saul Alinsky influenced by Marx and Engels?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think so. Alinsky was at least a socialist, and he said, "I could never be a communist because I could never join a party or an organization that told me what to do." All right, but he said we did. The communists did damn good work or something like that. And any socialist who tells you they didn't work with the communists is a g-damn liar or something like that. But he and of course, Alinsky, his statement dedicating in the acknowledgments section of his book, I go through this in The Devil and Karl Marx, what exactly he acknowledged, what exactly he didn't. But he has that statement in there in the front where Alinsky wrote, "Lest we forget, let's begin with at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to that first of all rebels who won for himself his own establishment, Lucifer." Lucifer. And that's very much symptomatic of Marx, Mikhail Bakunin, and a lot of these other individuals who looked up to Satan, even though they said they didn't believe in the supernatural. They liked Satan as this revolutionary figure who for them was like the ultimate anarchist against authority and against God.
I have a feeling that contributed to the title of your new book.
It did. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Kanger, what are your thoughts on the removal of history departments and classes from universities? And I would add to that high schools. They're getting rid of the statues. They're literally getting rid of the classes.
Yeah, the statues in particular. I mean, the whole statue movement has always bothered me as a historian. And I mean, I knew that when they started going for statues of Confederate generals, and by the way, I don't like the Confederacy at all. I am from Pennsylvania, right? I've never understood that at all. I've always been totally against those guys. But I thought, you know, if you kind of reserve onto yourself the right to form a group and go into a town wherever and put a noose and get a torch and tear down the statue, and no one can stop you, it's only a matter before they're coming for Washington and Jefferson and even Abraham Lincoln.
You've been listening to Paul Kengel, Professor of Political Science at Grove City College and New York Times bestseller author and presenter at the 2021 Bringing America Back to Life Convention.
From the Median is listener-supported. Visit our website, fromthemedian.org, for further information or to make a donation to continue to make this radio program possible. Email us, radionews@fromthemedian.org, or call 440-668-4049. Through our fromthemedian.org website, you can download this or previous programs for your listening pleasure or sign up to receive our weekly preview of upcoming guest interviews. Tune in every weeknight at the same time to listen to another great interview on From the Median as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. From the Median is brought to you by Cleveland Right to Life.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.